gas prices, which have nudged above $3 a gallon on average here in the St. Louis area and across the country. The national average and the St. Louis average both right about $3.01, $3.02. There are some gas stations higher, some gas stations lower. But we got there for the most part today. That sets a non-Katrina record for gas prices and brings up, of course, the question of alternatives. And when it comes to alternatives in the world of energy, I always turn to my friend Joel McCower, who writes about clean technology and the green marketplace and sustainable business and alternative energy forms. He is the founder of greenbiz.com and a writer and speaker and blogger on all of these subjects. And Joel, welcome back to KMOX.
Hello there, Paul.
Nice to have you back on here. Before we talk about cars and alternative energy, is there any way that Ameren UE customers here could have avoided the problems by being off the electrical grid and having alternative energy for their homes?
Not really. I mean, you can. Technically, it's possible to be off the grid, but it's a pretty challenging thing to do. I mean, even if you have solar power panels on your roof, all they do is they tie into the electric grid. It's called grid-tied solar, and it reduces your electric bill, but it doesn't run independently. Now, it's possible, again, technically you can do that. You can actually create a bank of batteries that would store some of that electricity when you had times like you're having now. But those storage capacities, I mean, you're basically taking a bunch of 12-volt car batteries, about 10 or 20 of them, and lining them up in your backyard. I mean, it's a mess.
Yeah.
And only home hobbyists do it, so you're not going to want to do that.
Okay, and there's no way with wind technology for me to have captured those 90-mile-an-hour winds last week and store them somehow?
Well, two problems there. One is the storage, again, having the bank of batteries. And second of all, where's the windmill? Is it on your roof? Because that's a pretty big mess there. Just to have that, your neighbors may not like that, not to mention the local birds. So that's an issue. So that, you know, wind power tends to be like central generating plants somewhere off in the distance that then again feeds into the electric grid.
Yeah, and we do have some of those here in the bi-state area, but not on a residential basis.
Right.
Now let's talk about the electric car. A couple of weeks ago, I had Chris Payne, who directed the documentary Who Killed the Electric Car, on the show, and we had an interesting discussion about it. And I know that you blogged about who cares about who killed the electric car. There actually are people who are making electric cars now. But again, this weekend, for people who are still in their sixth day of no electricity, that would also mean no car, wouldn't it?
Well, it could, but it depends on what kind of electric car you have. I mean, I think the most interesting and the most promising kinds of electric cars are something that you're going to be hearing a lot more about, called plug-in hybrid electric vehicles, or PHEVs, if you like initials. But plug-in hybrids, well, you know what hybrids are. Hybrids are like the Toyota Prius or the Honda Accord, several others, and GM's coming out with one this week called the Saturn View, and a few others. You know, they run on they have both a gas engine and an electric engine, and it runs on the electric engine when it's efficient to do so, and then when the gas engine is running, or when you're braking, it's taking some of that power and recharging the electric engine, so you don't have to plug it in. Well, that's all good, but now there's something taking it to the next level, which is called the plug-in hybrid. Basically, the same car, except it has two main differences. One is it has a much bigger battery that can store a lot more energy, and two, it has as the name implies, a plug. So you can plug it into the wall. You have much more electric power in your car now, so you can drive a lot farther. In fact, if you can go maybe 40, 50 miles, and if you have a 10-mile or 15-mile daily commute, you can drive back and forth to work without the gas engine ever kicking on, which means that ultimately, if you do the average kind of driving, you can be getting well over 100 miles per gallon equivalent of gasoline.
Although I have friends who two or three months ago bought a hybrid Camry, which I know is not a plug-in hybrid. It is one that has the batteries and gas engine both on board. And they told me that after driving it, and they don't do a lot of highway driving, it's local driving, taking the kids to this thing, to going to work, that sort of stuff. They told me they're really only getting about 33 miles per gallon.
Well, I don't know what the normal Camry gets. I mean, it's definitely an improvement. But there's a couple different, at least two different types of hybrid technologies, and I'm not a technology guy. I just play one on the internet. But I can't talk about this stuff in technical terms, but I can tell you that some types of hybrid technologies do better on the highway and some do better in the cities. And I don't know which one of the Camry has. They say do better in city driving. But in any case, so some of these things only get 30 or 35 miles per hour. But when you consider that for about the fifth year in a row, the U.S. average gas mileage did not budge a nickel in terms of the amount of miles per gallon that we're getting on average. It's still around 20 miles per gallon. It's still less today than it was 20 years ago because of all the trucks and SUVs and minivans. That 33 miles per gallon is not bad for that kind of driving. But the plug-in hybrid, where you're driving around almost all the time in the city, locally on pure electricity from the grid, and yeah, it costs you a little bit, but it's really pretty inexpensive. It's like getting 50 cents a gallon of gas equivalent. That's really that's where you can really get into the dozens, if not 100 or more miles per gallon.
How do those work if you run out of electrical energy and you don't have electricity like we didn't in many places in town this weekend, and you get in the car and the batteries have been completely drained and you can't plug in to recharge them? Does the car then run completely on the gas engine?
Yeah, it's got a gas. You've got the best of both worlds. You got your gas engine, which is more expensive to run because gas is more expensive and more polluting. But whenever you can avoid it, it automatically switches on to the electrical part. And so if there's no electricity, if your battery's dry and you hadn't recharged it and you can't plug it in, then, yeah, you still got a gas-powered vehicle just like you always had.
Talking with Joel McCower here about alternative energy and alternative vehicles, and particularly electric vehicles or plug-in electric vehicles. Are there more companies that are leaning in that direction now?
Well, right now there's nobody that's really leaning. I mean, no one's coming out with one. Most of what this is are aftermarket. You can take them to places and have your existing hybrid retrofitted with the better battery and the plug and all that. But Toyota and General Motors have both said that they will be introducing plug-in hybrids. And just last week, there was introduced in the House the Plug-in Hybrid Electric Vehicle Act of 2006. By a representative called Lamar Smith from Texas, and he's wanting to create more research and development. It wouldn't mandate any of these things, but this is something I think what's most interesting is that I don't think anyone had heard of plug-in hybrids, 6-8 months ago, except maybe 12 hobbyists who were trying, messing around with their Priuses. But all of a sudden, this stuff, GM and Toyota and Congress is talking about this stuff. I think that's pretty remarkable.
You've written about other companies that are also trying to go the electric vehicle route. Are those really just specialized niche vehicles?
Well, they are. I mean, they really come in two different flavors right now. One of these, in effect, are glorified golf carts. They're small, one- or two-seater, usually two-seater vehicles. Although there's one that's coming out from Daimler-Chrysler. Daimler-Chrysler had something called the Smart Car, which they're reviving, and they're going to make an electric version of. And I think that's interesting. These are just for tooling around, town, or, for a lot of corporations have them for around campuses or small areas where they're not going to be traveling long distances. And then at the other end, which is kind of interesting, are some really high-performance vehicles that are run totally on electricity, no gas at all. There's one that was introduced just last week called the Tesla, T-E-S-L-A, Tesla. I think you can go to teslamotors.com. The Tesla Roadster, it's built on a Lotus Elise body. It goes 160 miles an hour, and it goes from 0 to 60 in 4 seconds.
Holy cow!
And here's the cool part. It runs on, those little lithium-ion batteries that you have in your camera or your iPod or some other things?
Yeah.
It runs on those. It's got 6,800 of them.
Now, does that mean it's a heavier vehicle or a lighter vehicle?
I don't know the weight. It's a little two-seater sports car.
Okay.
And so it's competitive with that.
It can't be too heavy if it's going 0 to 60 in 4 seconds.
Well, exactly, yeah. There's another one. There's another thing called the Wright Speed, W-R-I-G-H-T, like Orville and Wilbur. Actually the guy, Ian Wright, used to work at Tesla, and he's created much more. It's not a roadster. It's much more of a race car. And he gave me a ride in one. And in a city block late at night in some neighborhood where it was safe to do this, he took me for a ride, and we went in one city block, not that, just a normal city block. We went from 0 to 80 to 0.
Holy cow.
It was the closest I could approximate to getting shot out of a cannon. But this is all electric. This is just run on batteries. So in other words, they can get that horsepower and the torque and all that stuff that us car junkies like up and you know, feeling like a Lotus, you know, like a really expensive car. Now, these are expensive cars. These cars right now are costing $80,000 to $100,000, so you're not going to be buying them, even though they wouldn't, even if you can afford them, they're not available till next summer. But the point is that the electric car technology is not just a little putt-putt thing that's not going to get you anywhere fast.
Now, is that technology, whatever it is they're using to get that much power out of a vehicle, going to come to the mass marketplace where it's going to eventually come down in price and that will become the mass marketplace, or will that remain a niche vehicle?
Well, there's no question that what they're learning in these big vehicles is going to start coming down in price to not only from other manufacturers, but even from these. I mean, the Tesla people, you know, want to introduce one, the next version of this car, closer to $50,000, $60,000. Still not a cheap car, but now you're talking about a BMW and not a Lotus. And so there will be some market there. But you can be sure that a lot of other smaller cars, the ones that are in the 10 and 20, 30,000, little, you know, right around town cars that are being developed right now are looking at that technology. And yeah, there's no question that what's happening at the high end, and that's always how it happens, whether you're talking about computers or VCRs or plasma televisions or any of the technology, it always starts at the very expensive, only 7 people can afford one, and eventually we're all buying them at, you know, some mass market big box store for $12.99.
Joel, let me take a break. We'll come back and talk some more about electric vehicles and other alternative energy possibilities at the $3 a gallon price. Maybe this is the tipping point for people when it comes to this. I always thought it would be $2 a gallon, then $2.50. Last year, we did see a little bit of that attitude change on the public's the public attitude changing when we got to the Katrina levels of 309 or so. But I don't see big drop-offs in SUV sales. I don't see big increases in people looking for fuel efficiency. We'll talk more about all of this with Joel McCower here in just a moment on the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX. Talking with Joel McCower, the founder of GreenBiz.com, writer, speaker, consultant on all sorts of alternative energy topics, and got a wonderful blog you can check out called readjoel.com. And in fact, he wrote a piece, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago called Who's Reviving the Electric Car? And if you go to readjoel.com, you can get a link to that Tesla car he was talking about a little while ago, and the Wrightspeed, that high-performance all-electric roadster that beat out a Porsche on a test track. And he was just telling that story about going in one city block 0 to 80 to 0 in an all-electric vehicle, which is pretty cool. And we'll include your phone calls too at 314-436-7900, toll-free 800-925-1120. In fact, let's do that now. John, you're on KMOX. Hello.
Hey, Charlie. How are you? Paul, how are you?
I'm doing fine. And say hi to Joel.
Hey, Joel, how are you?
Good, thanks.
You know, all this sounds good, but it's a lot more complicated than you would imagine. For starters, if right now in California they're having power outages, and if everybody had an electric car, it would blow up the whole grid and there would be no power at all.
Well, you're absolutely right, and that's assuming that everybody got an electric car at the same time. And the fact is, it's, you know, first of all, they're going to be coming out slowly but surely over the next couple of years, and it takes, you know, a full 10 years or more to really get enough cars on the road when you think about how long people keep their cars to make a difference. So it you know, it's technically true, but it's going to be a long, drawn-out and process, which is bad news in a sense, but it's good news for utilities that can then adjust to this.
Let's say they do come up, and how much coal will you have to burn to for every car in America to get power?
Yeah, that's a question I was going to ask Joel about the environmental impact of going electric. Somebody's got to provide that electricity. That electricity's got to come from some source. And if it's coal, are we really doing anything to help the environment rather than burning it in an internal combustion engine?
Well, there's no free lunch, and we have to pollute, unfortunately, to make electricity, at least so far. And so the challenge is, do you make more pollution from coal than from burning oil? And the answer is no. That burning oil is more polluting, and a number of studies have shown that. But I think the other thing that's happening is that we're going to be seeing, and it's already happening in some parts of the country, where we're going to peak to time of use pricing on energy. So remember on your phone bill, I don't really see this much anymore. It used to cost you, you know, more if you made a call between 9 a.m. till 5, and then after 5 or 6, the rates went down, and after 11 o'clock, they went down even further.
Yeah.
We're going to see electricity like that, too. So we're going to have incentives to want to run our appliances and including recharging our car late at night when that not that many people are using electricity. So it will keep the more efficient plants in use and let us run the polluting ones less.
So when most people are using electricity, most businesses are going during the day, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, electricity would still be the daytime peak. But at night, you know, I get home at 7 o'clock at night or so, I plug my car in then, it's probably not going to be as much of a strain on the grid. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. In fact, there'll probably be some timer where you can let your car start charging after midnight when everyone's asleep and get even lower rates.
You've also written about something called the Think. What is that?
Well, the Think was a little two-seater electric car that was introduced. It was invented in Scandinavia. Ford bought it in the mid-90s and actually had a fairly successful run with it and put about $120 million into it. And then Jacques Nasser, who was the CEO at the time, decided that they wanted to stick to their core technologies, which basically were making big polluting SUVs and the like in trucks, and which were the more profitable things. And they abandoned the Think and sold it off to a company that eventually went bankrupt. And just in March of this year, some investors purchased it for next to nothing, and now they're looking at how do we revive this Think automobile, a little, you know, cool two-seater car that, again, for you know, some people may scoff at it as a glorified golf cart. It's much bigger than that, but it's just for a certain kind of driving. I think, you know, one of the things we've got caught up in this country is that we take our big car out for a little, you know, six-block outing, and most of the pollution, a lot of the pollution, disproportionate amount, is emitted when the engine's cold in the first mile or two of driving. So let's figure out how to have at least a small car around so we can use it for pollution-free to run down to the store and save the big one that pollutes and uses gas for when we're going to be taking, you know, long road trips.
You mentioned that you had been in the Wrightspeed, that really fast, big, expensive electric car. Have you been in one of these cheap little cars?
Yeah, I drove the Think actually a few weeks ago, and it ain't a Porsche. Make no mistake, but it had pretty good pickup, and I was able to drive around, and it felt like a fun little car to drive. It certainly would allow me to do my errands. And as long as I didn't live, you know, in a big hilly area, but
you know, now wait a second.
Well, you know, it's got limits. The technology is new and it needs tweaking. And it's, you know, just like any technology, this stuff is not yet ready for prime time. I'll be the first to tell you that. Unless you want to buy a Tesla, which isn't, you know, like I said, is a year away. So it's going to be another year or two. So that's why I love the plug-in hybrid idea, because the plug-in electric hybrids, because you've got the best of both worlds. And that technology is, I mean, I know people who are driving those things today, and they're getting 100 miles per gallon.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Don, you're on KMOX. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Just recently on the Internet, there was something about a gentleman that invented a battery, converted water into hydrogen and oxygen, and he had a car that ran on that.
Yeah.
Do you know anything about it?
Well, I've seen a bunch of these things, and some of them are real and some of them aren't. I don't know the particular one you're speaking of, but as you well know, that the water is H2O. The H is hydrogen. There's hydrogen in water, and the question is, how do you pull the hydrogen out in order to run a fuel cell, which is basically a battery that runs on hydrogen? And there are lots of people working on that, and it's right now years away, and some people say we'll never really ever get there. So,
but Don, I'll answer the question about the specific email, because I get this sent to me at least three times every week, because we talk about alternative energies and gas and all that stuff on the show, and so people, oh, I just saw this. Why don't we do this? Why can't we have water running our cars? Those are the equivalent of the perpetual motion machine. The guy who is credited with creating those things never actually had any vehicle that ran on water. It's all a scam. He actually is doing some time now for running a con where he raised money from people, and then, of course, it didn't actually get used for anything. And yet, for, you know, God bless the Internet, it keeps these urban legends alive, but it's not true. Unfortunately, if only it were true that instead of having a plug in, you could just hook up the hose and the car could go. But they're not there yet. Sorry, Don.
Okay, well, thank you.
But what about the future of hydrogen-based vehicles?
Well, again, they're working on them, but I think it's a ways off. And, you know, one of the problems, there's several problems. One is actually creating vehicles and, you know, that run on hydrogen, but the other is where the heck do you get the hydrogen from? And so creating a whole new infrastructure of, you know, putting it in trucks or pipelines or, you know, turning every gas station into a hydrogen station, that's a huge endeavor. And if you think about what we're talking about now, you know, plug-in hybrids, we're talking about, you know, technologies we already have, gasoline and electricity. And so in some ways, I think there will be still a certain amount of excitement around hydrogen. It's not something we're going to be seeing it for 10 or 20 years or maybe ever.
Joel, can you stick around for one more segment?
Just a little bit, yeah.
Okay, I've got a few more phone calls and a couple other things I want to ask you about as well. Joel McCower, you can find him online at greenbiz.com and readjoel.com. This is the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX. 314-436-7900, toll free 800-925-1120. Talking with Joel McCower about electric cars. And in the last segment, Joel, you talked about infrastructure, which we have for gasoline delivery and electricity. Ford has recently been putting a push on for an E85 corridor here through the Midwest on Interstate 70 and Interstate 55, trying to get more gas stations to get E85 pumps going. Do you see that as part of the future, or is that infrastructure just going to take too long to build out as well?
No, ethanol is definitely part of the solution, and I think what we're talking about and starting to recognize is that there's no one silver bullet. Actually, what there are is a bunch of silver BBs, lots of different solutions that we're going to have, and which means we get choice. And when there's times of when oil is really expensive, which it is and is going to stay at for a while, then ethanol or electricity may be a better choice. And there may be times when we've maxed out on ethanol because there's not enough corn and they haven't figured out how to make it cheaply from other things yet. And when we switch around, so we're not only are we not held hostage to foreign oil, but we're not held hostage to oil. And that's, I think, is where this is all going. So, yeah, E85 is part of the answer.
And I should mention one of the other websites that Joel's involved in is renewus.org, which has more information about all of these alternative forms of energy and about the future as well. Tom, you're on KMOX. Hello.
Yeah, industry has given over 100 years for the research and development of carbon energy. How come the industry won't even give 10 years for the research and development of hydrogen energy?
Well, I think they have been giving it, Tom. I think that they've been researching this for a while, and odds are that companies like GM and a number of others are committed to this and are going to continue to do this. The federal government's been funding quite a bit of hydrogen. It's not that no one's patient or no one wants to do it. It's just that all the plans and the research says that it's going to be at least 10 and probably more like 20 years before hydrogen is a viable fuel for passenger cars. Now, that doesn't mean that there won't be some trucks and some fleets and some other things. In other words, if you're, let's say, UPS or FedEx or just the local delivery company, and all the trucks come back to one location at night, and you can have a hydrogen fueling station there, or natural gas, which is what a lot of the fleets now use, you can have those kinds of things. We're just talking about the cars that you and I are going to drive that we want to be able to go down Interstate 70 or any interstate or any city street and find a station where we can fill it up when we need it.
Right. For instance, I've talked to the guy who runs fleet services for the city of Kirkwood here just outside of St. Louis, and they run everything on natural gas. Unfortunately, if you're, you know, the other side of the river and you find yourself low, you're not going to have a place to go to fill up. You got to go back to where their fleet is based in Kirkwood and get more natural gas for your vehicle there.
One of the things you're finding, Paul, is that with things like E85, some of the companies that offer it are now helping you find stations. So, for example, if you have a GM car that has that OnStar system,
yep,
and you have a flex fuel vehicle that takes E85, you can actually call them and say, here's where I am, or maybe they even know where you are already, and where's the closest E85 station, and they'll help you find it.
Pretty cool. Okay, back to the phones. Louise, you're on KMOX. Hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. And I just have a question for replacement batteries, the cost. I read several months ago that they're going to be quite expensive, and the depreciation on the car is not going to make it so the people are going to want to be able to replace the battery. Have you heard anything about that, or do you know anything about it?
You're talking about current cars, you know, the kinds of batteries we now have?
No, she's talking about the batteries you would have
in
electric cars or a plug-in.
Right. Well, yeah, those are going to be expensive batteries. I mean, I think one of the things that people are looking at and that's going to, I think, we're going to be having to consider is a sort of a different business model. For example, you go into a station, and instead of plugging in, which takes, you know, 2 hours, let's say, if you were to fully recharge a battery, you just swap out a battery. And there's a little machine that takes the battery out and puts a new one in. And it's like you go in with your propane tank now and you don't get it filled. You just give them the old one and take a full one. So we may be finding that, you know, we're leasing batteries. We're owning the car, but we lease the battery or we pay, you know, for a new battery, but it's the equivalent of a fill-up. So there's all sorts of new business models that could come out of this because these batteries are going to be expensive, and so they're going to make the economics of car buying more expensive. That's a really good point.
And, of course, as business expands, the economy of scale kicks in, and then prices will drop, hopefully, on everything, whether you're leasing the battery, buying the battery, or whatever.
Sure.
I know you got to run, and I appreciate your extra time today, Joel. Thank you very much.
Paul, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. I'll see you on the Internet.
All right. His website is called readjoel.com, readjoel.com, or you can go to renewus.org, another website he's involved in to find out more about this, and greenbiz.com is the company that he founded. Joel McCower, writer, speaker, and expert on alternative energies, who I guarantee will be back here on the Paul Harris Show to talk more about this. On News Talk 1120 KMOX.